And then try, because I think that's, if that would be really good. And then the other one is I want to do a table at each of the hotels where people are, a table outside the vet's hall, table up at the armory, and try to get build like cells in each of the places of union membership, and then also a table out on Delaware, or really on whatever that is, Natural Bridges, and trying to get like a unit of people that are organizing to not be kicked out of Natural Bridges, and then you know, things like that, where we're starting to build resistance amongst different constituencies that live in unstable housing. So then the other thing I've been working on is a flyer. So it turns out 59% of Americans in 2019, polled by Charles Schwab, of all things, some polling company funded by them, said that they're one paycheck away from homelessness. That was before the pandemic. So I've got a flyer addressing those people that I want to put out. So anyway, those are some of the projects that, and trying to get them to join the union, house people to join the union, and to resist eviction and stuff like that. I'm trying to work with Zob and them on tenants' rights and kind of meshing the two communities.
Is he actually doing anything these days, Zob? Do you have any reports from tenants' groups?
Not really. I see Zob every once in a while write something on Facebook or something, but I haven't seen. But you know, there is. It's this weird thing. We're accepting food like crazy right now, right now, of course. I suspect today that the chaos of today and tomorrow and yesterday at the Benchlands has reduced the amount of people coming to eat because people are trying to get a space, and I know Greg got a space, and then he lost his space, and he got a space, and he lost his space, and then some people are just taking the city provided tents and just moving off into the river.
And of course, what Keith is talking about, I'm pretty sure that this is relatively easy to follow, but the 122 spaces set up in the Benchlands by court order involves, I guess, I'm not sure it was actually ordered. In fact, it didn't seem to be explicitly ordered, but the city is providing tents, and then if Jeremy's account is accurate, also these phone charging hookups, water hookups, or water access anyway. And so it's desirable. People are perhaps coming in from different places, though I've done no survey down in the Benchlands. That would be something perhaps to do tomorrow, if you're listening to this on May 2nd. So once we've done sort of provided support as best we can to those who are currently in the upper park and don't want to move, after that task is done, if it does get done, or however it concludes, we can move down to the Benchlands and set up shop down there and see if we can get more information about what's happening. That's a possibility too.
Oh, that's great. And there was a really brutal OD. It took 7 Narcan to get the guy back to life again. That was the first thing I came upon yesterday when I was there. That was a freak out, man. People screaming and yelling, trying to pull their body out of the tent. Oh my God, and they're jumping on him and they're giving him mouth to mouth. And gee, that was trippy. It looked like he was a goner. So you got that.
Well, anybody got more questions for Keith?
I'd like to ask him a question. Well, I'd like to tell you that I'm in the Salt Air Motel, and there's vacancies in 3 of the 6 motels, so I wonder if you've checked out how many people. I don't know, they're still hiring where I am, and so you should check out the motels that are actually operating and serving food.
Can you hear that?
That's another thing is we needed to find find out how long there was kind of a rumor that the hotels will still be, people would stay till September when the FEMA money runs out. That's kind of the rumor, but we don't know for sure. So she's in Saltillo?
Yeah.
And then there's also, what's the other one? There's like four hotels, right, roughly?
How many?
Fireside, there's six of them.
She says there's six.
Okay.
Six,
great. So we should set up a team in each one.
I think part
of the idea is to just not leave when people are eventually told, but spend the between now and September organizing councils for each of the hotels.
So Keith, Cherie says you should call who?
The Comfort Inn, the Fireside.
Call the.
If you call Josh, the project manager at the Salt Air, he'd tell you the name of the motels.
You got that?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, at Fireside, I've got friends in there I'm working with. I've got friends at Salt Air. I got friends, a lot of friends at Oceana. The Capri, is that another one? That's, I don't know if that's city run. Maybe Santa Cruz Motel. So the concern there is to make sure that they stay open as long as possible.
Well, I just heard on KSBW. Say random news stuff. I heard on KSBW that each person at the motel is being given 20. The board of supervisors voted in that each person is given $24,000 to find a one bedroom apartment. So I went up to the project manager and asked him when that was kicking in, and he said I didn't know about it. I said, are you included in the list to like try and make him feel important? But there's a lot of money being around here that we need to track down. Like, where exactly, Gloria's right, like, where exactly are they spending this money? You know, if they're given these millions of dollars by the feds during the COVID time, nobody knows what to do with all these millions of dollars that the governor's collected, and he's busy passing it on. Everyone's busy passing money around, and so we ought to jump on where is it going.
Well,
so I think we need to go to the forensic accounting at the university and get the team up there to do that.
Okay. We'll be on it right away. Monica, you're in charge of the
team. I'll do that next. I'll email the people.
So I think you've
count your money and you count mine.
So I anything more for Keith before I move on to the next agenda item?
What time is the maypole thing?
What time is the maypole thing on May 1st? I imagine that.
It's Saturday starting at noon, and then the concert itself officially starts at 2. Yeah.
And officially starts at 2. So.
Yeah.
So come at noon for the sexual activity, and then at 2 for the food. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
And is it somebody's birthday?
A survey.
May 1st is somebody's birthday. We know.
Yeah, it would be mine and Blue's. Stuff like that. Yeah.
This is May 1st.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Happy birthday week.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's all you get to say, Keith, unless you want to say something more.
No, that was way more than what I wanted to say.
Any other questions for Keith?
I found the Econ 116 Advanced Topics in Accounting and Ethics. So I got a hold of that person.
He's got a question for you.
Oh.
These surveys are great, so I just filled mine out. I'm wondering, are there any small groups of people, artists, gardeners, people who are interested in sustainability, who want to create community and inner peace, and people like me and Emmy and anyone like that, that are wanting to be a part of the tiny home project possibilities?
Well, yeah, I guess just show up to the 5 o'clock meeting and see. Yeah, I mean, we're just that's totally. Who knows what's gonna happen with that? But that'd be, yeah, that's what I would do. Just show up at 5.
5 tomorrow.
5.
Yeah. And then we'll figure out what we're doing.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it, I guess. Anything else?
Okay. There you have it.
Happy birthday week.
Happy birthday to your mom,
bye.
Keith.
Mayday.
And that was only a few of the thrilling commentaries back and forth that happened at the Huff meetings, often interminably, but sometimes informatively. So that's not all bad. However, sometimes we get into some real, to me, very interesting stuff that can be considered sensitive. And when Cherie, who you'd heard talking about, asking questions regarding motels, which she's in right now. She was a really strong but weathered, I called her a survival sleeper, but she was part of the Freedom Sleepers movement when it eventually moved from just happening every Tuesday outside City Hall in protest against there being a sleeping ban citywide to the actual under the eaves of the staff offices throughout the day and night for about a month, which perturbed the staff to endlessly. They didn't like that much, and they drove her away with phony tickets about blocking the sidewalk and unlawful lodging or public nuisance, one of the three, I'm not sure which. And she's been coming pretty regularly to Huff meetings after a brief sabbatical in the salt air, where she's been, relaxing. It's kind of spring is encouraging people to come out of their warrens, so to speak. She has suffered a lot of abuse, as she describes it anyway, at the hands of so-called mental health authorities. And she talked about that at an earlier Huff meeting the week before, and I'm going to play that now with her permission. And what we jump into now is a discussion of the danger of Laura's Law, the law that allows much easier confinement and forced drugging of people for so-called mental health conditions that was passed 20 years ago in this state, but only will become mandatory in this county unless the county opts out after a law that was a follow-up law that was passed this last December, which requires counties to either opt out or start providing for the Laura's Law restrictions on people, which in essence allows courts to order psychiatrists or psychiatric workers to come to your house with medication and force you to take the medication, or drag you off to a hospital, I guess. It also has a much more loosened standard for holding people against their will. Currently, the standard used to be under the Landerman-Petras Short Act, danger to yourself, danger to others, or gravely disabled. And supposedly you're allowed to have a hearing. It's called a Reese hearing, which I've talked about on the air about a year ago, I think. It's not clear how often that is allowed in Santa Cruz mental hospital wards, psychiatric wards, or how effective it is. You seem to need to get some kind of doctor's permission to do it, which seems kind of, I would say unlikely, but I could be misunderstanding some of the procedure. I did have an interview with George Cavallo, who's our advocate, or supposedly is our advocate, has been for 20 or 30 years. Supposedly he comes and advises you if you want to have a hearing. The hearing would be, it's not a court hearing, it's a hearing in the hospital itself that allows you to say that, to make the case to the administrator that you don't need a medication of the kind that is being proposed, that there's a less intrusive, less damaging way of dealing with the so-called problems that they're trying to treat you for. And that's something I've been trying to get more and better information on, but not been following it as thoroughly and as carefully as perhaps I might. But what we have now is, you can hear Cherie talk about her own experience some months back, where she was apparently picked up because of untidy room management in her motel room, and then spirited away to Sacramento to a psych ward up there and held there against her will for a month without having access to this Reese hearing and forcibly medicated, which disturbs me and disturbed me when I heard it. But you get to hear her talk about it now.
What I need from you is like an email saying, do it when I get, because, and that would be, if you find time among that, and I understand.
I will do it.
And what I'm talking about here and what we're discussing is the Board of Supervisors, who has the power to opt out of Laura's Law. They need to be approached massively by a lot of the public saying don't do it, because there's groups of people in the public who have bought this, the psychiatric industry's line that mental illness is some sort of biochemical deficiency, which, as I understand it, was disproved in the 80s, and I've been persuaded by the writings of Robert Whittaker in his book Mad in America and the Anatomy of an Epidemic, two works I recommended, which I recommend. And so it's that the outcomes for people using psychiatric medication over the long run are generally not as good as those who allow natural healing processes or use other means of dealing with things, although there are some circumstances. Apparently, medications have a short-term benefit that can reduce symptoms, but they ultimately make relapses more likely. That's the claims of the World Health Organization, Whittaker discovered, found that in areas where medication wasn't being used, the ability of people to recuperate from so-called schizophrenic or manic depressive ailments was much higher. And he was not sure, you know, he became astounded by this because he thought initially that it was the other way around, as many have thought, although I've been, frankly, a critic of psychiatric medication for decades based on the experiences of close friends. So, let's hear some more of that.
Right now.
Okay, well, let's see if I actually can respond to that when I get it. That'd be good.
Yeah,
I might. It shouldn't be that hard to do.
It's something that will make a difference.
Yeah, it's something we should try.
And we're talking about, again, organizing in our own small way some, please don't opt into this Laura's Law stuff to the Board of Supervisors. Anybody listening can do the same, write them and saying, oh, we do not want Laura's Laws here until there is, we prefer alternate facilities and alternate care such as MHCAN and client-run peer groups rather than the psychiatric dope them up and keep them coming back for more dope approach. And if that doesn't work, try another concoction, which may make things worse and give you even more pretext to try a third concoction. So,
well, it might. It depends
on
how much.
I don't want to go to jail for six months for doing nothing. I don't. Being medicated against my will, it's not right. They made me have blood poisoning for a week and a half before they let me get operated on, because they didn't give a shit about me.
I mean, what's your first? The first groups that have to be approached are not the supervisors, but the MHCAN and the people who might actually advocate for this. I'm not quite sure. Maybe I can think of some of those folks. There used to be people around actually fighting this kind of forced hospitalization, forced incarceration, forced drugging.
Unfortunately, now what you have, or what you had for the last few years, was groups like Take Back Santa Cruz, eager to perhaps sweep homeless people off the streets who they designate as mentally ill, by having these much loosened standards of forced incarceration, forced medication, and then claim they're doing it for their own good. And they've kind of enlisted the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, I think, in this. So there's some very strong pressure groups are going to be pushing for Laura's Law, and it's from my relatively uninformed perspective right now, it doesn't look good.
Maybe they still are. I just haven't seen much of them. I mean, I think there are groups in other parts of the state and other states. Up in Oregon, there's a group, Mind Freedom, it's called. There is a group of healthcare providers who are concerned with the civil liberties of people who are incarcerated in mental wards, in psych wards.
They don't have any.
They should have, but you're right. But they practically, it's even laid out in law. It's just not followed. Similarly, here in Santa Cruz, you know, you have, I don't know how effective the Reese hearings are. I've talked about that before. You may remember, some of you who've been around in these hearings. Reese is the hearing that Elizabeth Reese was able to get in 1989. She was refusing medication because she felt it had really deleterious effects on her in the past. And she was able to successfully get a ruling from a court that she could do that. So then they set up a system called Reese hearings, which you don't get to have before a judge. You get to have it in the hospital before an administrator. You need to have a doctor ask for the hearing. It's got all kinds of crap involved, but it has some protections, particularly if there is, and this is my point, a bunch of people outside shouting, open up the fucking hearing. Not sending them a letter and so forth, not writing a but I'm doing these things too, for sure. But also getting out there. And when that starts to happen, then you see things change. Sometimes.
Well, they're on the phone.
So, while we wait for things to change, or while we take the actions that might actually prompt that change, here's a little music to while away some of that time.
I'll sing you a song of Anita Hill and a great thing she has done. Took a dirty little game that thrives in the dark and dragged it out into the sun. She dragged it out into the sun, good friends, where everyone could see. It wasn't good enough for the Senate, but it's good enough for me. It wasn't good enough for the Senate, but it's good enough for me. The Senate, the White House, a powerful crew, Judge Thomas, the man of the day. They didn't want to listen to Anita Hill, but she told the truth anyway. She told the truth anyway, good friends, at the risk of a job and her name. And wouldn't this world be a better place if some of them would do the same? Now, wouldn't this world be a better place if some of them would do the same? It wasn't that she didn't feel pressure. It wasn't that she didn't feel fright. It wasn't that she stood to gain a damn thing. She just did what she knew was right. She did what she knew was right, good friends, and she stood with an iron will. And if Clarence gonna get to be uppity, he could take a lesson from Anita Hill. I called up a friend in Michigan. I said, what does it mean to you? She said, if Anita can stand and deliver, maybe I can do it too. Cause it's happened to me and I let it pass in anger, shame and fear. But I ain't gonna take that crap anymore. Best news I've heard all year. Best news I've heard all year. Good friends, for the battle is raging still. Stand up, talk back, don't take their crap. Three cheers for Anita Hill. Stand up, talk back, don't take their crap. Three cheers for Anita Hill.
And that was The Ballad of Anita Hill. Also, of course, by Charlie King. And he came out with that one, looks like 1991. It's from Two Good Arms, an earlier album. And it's a little hard to hear, but it's got some punchy lyrics and a nice twangy tune and a nice beat. So hope you liked it.
talking to you, making decisions, saying, well, we're just robbing your freedom for another few days. Doesn't matter, whatever you say doesn't matter to us. Oh, you don't like that they only give you Tylenol and you're allergic to it? Too bad. You don't like that you get meat every time you want vegetables only? Too bad.
And that's why...
They fucked me over good.
Yeah.
I had a year ago when I went in May for like a month. I was going to go to the ceramics conference in Davis, and I made a 3-foot-tall bear that I was going to take over there, and I lost all of my ceramics, all my porcelain that I made. They just screwed me over. They kept me for a month that time. Kept me for a month and a half, a month and a week the last time for not doing my laundry in time.
You want to describe more of that? I know you were reluctant to talk about this in the past. I'm glad to,
well, they,
you know.
They said I didn't do my laundry. You have to turn in your laundry between 7 and 8, and if you turn it in after 8, then forget you. So I hadn't turned it in for 2 weeks, and I was trying to sort it all and clean my room. My friend moved in next door, and she brought her bipolar son, who was so manic that I flipped into bipolar 1. I've never been bipolar 1 before, but... She had his head right next to where I slept, and since I'm psychic, I could feel it, and I just, but they had no right to pick me up. I was in my room. I never came out of my room.
Describe what happened. Somebody just came by,
The ambulance came. First, the police came by and knocked on the door and drug me over to the ambulance and sat there and visited with me a while. I thought it was, they just wanted to talk about, did I have a headache or... Did I eat recently or whatever? But no, it was all about going to the whatever that
psych ward.
Yeah, the psych ward, and they kept me over there for. They kept me 3 different times when they could have released me. After 3 days, they have to release you, and they kept me 9 days and said I didn't eat for 9 days. They never offered me one thing, and they know that I. All they had
is what
the people who work there.
They being, I mean, what is the name of the group, the place, the psych ward?
They call it the PUF.
The pub?
The PUF. P-U-F. P-U-F-F. Yeah.
And
it's right over there on SoCal by, Jeffries. It's right next to Jeffries.
It's a psychiatric holding ward.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I was there for 9 days. I wasn't even offered ramen noodles, so... You know, I never came out of my room because people were crawling around licking the floor and stuff, and I didn't want to be around most people. I'd rather be alone forever than be around.
Was it after that that sent you off to Sacramento, or when was that another time?
That was that time. They kept me in the PEP for 9 days. You and Gloria could have come to see me if I only knew I was in Santa Cruz. I didn't even know where I was.
Did you have anybody advise you of your rights or anything of that sort of course?
I didn't get advice of nothing. And then instead of taking me to Santa Clara, which is the closest one where the long-term ones and all the nurses are and stuff, and I know the nurses over there. I've drawn pictures for the art people. They love me at that one. They drugged me all the way up to Sacramento, which took like hours. And I went... Why in the hell did you drag me over here? It's for like old people. It was just the most horrible place. Like most of the people in there, I don't know that. When I looked around, I didn't see anyone that had serious addiction problems, or they were on meth, or they were looking for a fix, or nobody was like trying to. I was wondering, what are we doing in here? We're trapped in the TV room, sitting next to each other when we're supposed to socially distance. So I stayed in my room because I didn't want to be around other people.
How long were you held there for?
A month and a week.
And you were forcibly medicated?
I was held there from before Melissa's birthday. I missed Melissa's birthday again, her 14th birthday. I was held there for... I didn't even know where I was. I was in Sacramento. They called in one time in a month and a half. I call Sarah like every day trying to get a ride back down here or whatever. And I'd set up the ride, and then the doctor would block it and go, well, you're not leaving because we've decided that you have to take more medication. And they kept saying they're going to give me a shot because they know I'm terrified of shots. So they'd say, well, if you don't take your medication, then we're going to give you this big needle I have right here. They'd show it to you like, oh, God, I don't want the damn needle. Give me the stupid stuff that makes me sick.
Well, that's why I call Laura's Law needles on wheels, because
it's horrible.
It's not only will they shoot you up in the wards, they get a court order to come to your house and do it.
That's what they wanted to do.
I don't know how frequently it is used in different states, but it is the case in almost all 50 states now. And I don't know how many counties in California now. In California, it's on a county-by-county basis. But the state
wrote it down in the 90s
but the
in
state,
Sacramento.
Yeah, but the state... Yeah, I know. But then it was passed in 2002. So that's passed 2 years later, I guess. And then it was... This year, this last year, passed at the state level in California, requiring there be an opt-out, or else they opt you in, and then you have to do all this other stuff. I think, I don't know whether it's on pain of losing funding or penalties. So the only thing, the reason I hedge a little bit, Laura, about whether, you know, I want you to email me and then I'll maybe do something, is because it requires some research for me to be accurate in all these particulars.
Don't give us particulars, Robert. We want something very short, concise. You know it off the top of your head. Just write down what you already know, because nobody wants to read a whole lot about this. You just give us what we have to believe is that, you know, the general idea is what we need to ask them. That's all we need, really, is the general idea. People don't have the time to read through your legalese and all that. If you send me a complicated email, I will edit it down to a few lines explaining clearly and simply as I can what we want people to do and why. And this is a very good example, and, you know, I'll hopefully be able to use something like this for our tent protest. We can publicize this. On the other hand, I wanted to mention that this is exactly why we are trying to get an alternate emergency response, defund, take the money from the police force that don't need it and don't do the right things with it.
The tent protests, of course, for those of you who've been following the show, were about three successive Sundays on Pacific Avenue. Laura was out there, that's Laura speaking, you've just heard, with a tent, and we were, a couple more of us, myself, Gloria, and a few others, were at a table giving out literature, encouraging people to sign up, interviewing folks, mainly around the issue of the reality that for a lot of folks outside, shelter, privacy, security is a tent, and these are being threatened by the authorities with both the TOLO law, the lifting of the injunction, and other ordinances that Chief Mills, the police chief, is using throughout the city. That's what that's about.
Take the money out of these organizations that are forcing people to be medicated against their will, and support people living where they need to, where they can live and have a decent life. Because, you know, you, if you had an apartment or a house or someplace to be, they wouldn't be coming around saying you're crazy and trying to stick you with needles.
Okay, two things. First, you're okay with... are you okay with this going out on the air, on the net? Because you've talked about some of your personal stuff.
Yeah,
how do you feel?
Well, you know,
I think it's important, but I'm not you.
Blue eyes. You're born with the chromosomes and genes that you were given, and bipolarism runs in our families, run in our family for generations, and being psychic together. So it's a big load over there, but it kind of balances it balances out. So I enjoy being intellectual.
Psychic and psychotic both?
Yeah. I enjoy being intellectual.
Hey, I'm bipolar all the time.
Well, bipolar, I've got to tell you that I've read about it because it's in my family too, and I have that cycle.
I knew it. She's crazy as they come.
Well, you know, you get excited about some things, and other days you feel lousy about something.
Yep.
But it's, you know what? The most creative people.
Andrea.
I've read about it, and the most creative people are often bipolar.
Yep, they are.
Okay, so getting back to our getting our polls straight here again, the other thing is a lot of praise goes to, beginning given to Kahoot-style stuff. But, and now you must look at this, because if you're pushing it,
no,
you should,
I'm not.
But maybe you should be. I mean, I actually don't know that there are problems. See, this is the reason when you say, Robert, don't give us all the details. Give us the nub of it, and we'll take it from there. I want to be sure that I'm not misleading people. That's why I need to find the details myself. And in order to do that, I need to be given motivation to get to those details.
So I want you to understand, in this case, the details have not been hammered out. If we're asking for a Kahoot-style response, it's still up to us in this county to make the details of that come together.
Cahoots is a program up in Eugene, which is supposedly a substitution for police behavior when there's a homeless or mental health problem, a non-violent response, or at least a non-lethal response. Very small percentage of the Eugene budget goes to it. Very small percentage of the calls get ferried over to Cahoots, as I understand it. And the Santa Cruz City Council has been absolutely uninterested in the issue. In fact, they've refused to even consider a pilot program. They refused to consider somebody coming down and talking to them about it. Councilmember Matthews pushed through a bring it back in June if you want, was what she did back in January, and that's where it sits now on the city council agenda, or where it doesn't sit is a better way of putting it.
Started, and then we can come together and decide, well, how is this going to work best for us? Because, you know, once you get a van together, and you have people that, you know, a mental health professional that with compassion, that can counsel people and talk to them, and an emergency medical technician who is able to deal with, you know, physical illness and things like this that may exacerbate mental illness, you know, without the orientation that they're going to be medicating people against their will. Well, once we do that, we've just got the start of it, because the whole rest of the mental health establishment has to become more compassionate. You can't have this kind of holding tank where people are fed nothing but ramen for a week and then taken someplace else and shot with medicines they don't want. We have to fix the entire system. But the first thing in my mind is that if we can get the police response out of it, all they have is a gun. It's like having nothing but a hammer. You have do you use what you have?
Talking to the converted, we agree with it. I think we all agree with this. We don't, you know.
Yeah, I'm just.
Yeah, yeah, no. I mean, and what I'm saying, I mean, there is some we disagree on. We noted earlier in the meeting. And so that's okay. You know, that's the spice of life, and sometimes the pepper.
Right.
So, you know, I just, because you have to leave shortly, and so do I want to see if I can get something else done here, too. What I was saying was, I think for your own dialogue, but I think that concludes Cherie's account as much as she gave. I haven't yet heard from Laura, I don't think, regarding jab me with an email so that I'll start paying some attention to getting more details about what the Board of Supervisors is or isn't doing about Laura's Law and what their deadlines are and whether organizations might be helpful here. So if anybody has any interest in this issue, do give me a call on the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833.
Got married in a hurry and we had us a son back in 1973. I was drafted at the end of the Vietnam War, though I never did go overseas. But I remember the look on the ones who came back. Their faces still haunt me so. And I made myself a promise I would do what it takes, so Jimmy didn't have to go. 'Cause if Jimmy didn't have to go, there's nothing I wouldn't do. That boy means the world to me, and he ought to mean the world to you. I don't know why we throw lives away and come home with nothing to show. I only know I would sell my soul if Jimmy didn't have to go. I went from the army to the army reserves. There's nothing that moves I can't fix. I didn't think much about it, just a weekend warrior. Then I turned 36, and they called me in, and they shipped me out. I'm thinking now I could have said no, but I whispered to Kathy we would finish it early, so Jimmy didn't have to go. 'Cause if Jimmy didn't have to go, there's nothing I wouldn't do. That boy means the world to me, he ought to mean the world to you. I don't know why we throw lives away and come home with nothing to show. I only know I would sell my soul if Jimmy didn't have to go. They said it wouldn't come to hand, though the border's just a mile away. Well, the enemy surprised us from behind. They were running back the other way. Guess they were looking for a place to hide. Guess they were looking for a face they'd know. Wondering what the hell they were doing there and why they ever had to go. But if Jimmy didn't have to go, there's nothing I wouldn't do. That boy means the world to me, and he ought to mean the world to you. I don't know why we throw lives away and come home with nothing to show. I only know I would sell my soul if Jimmy didn't have to go. I killed a soldier with a silent knife. I pulled him down on top of me. I looked into the eyes, looking back into mine. He couldn't have been 17. I held him as he died so quiet. I held him as he died so slow. I held him till I knew it wasn't enough, that Jimmy didn't have to go. They sent me up for court-martial, 'cause I wouldn't do a thing I was told. Their lawyer said I was a coward, mine said I was just too old. But it wasn't the fear of the bombs above or the fear of the gas below. I'm afraid to meet the eyes of the Iraqi father whose Jimmy had to go. 'Cause if his Jimmy didn't have to go, God, there's nothing I wouldn't do. That boy means the world to me now, and he ought to mean the world to you. I don't know why we throw lives away and come home with nothing to show. I only know there's a time to say no, and Jimmy didn't have to go.
If Jimmy Didn't Have to Go was from Sparks and Tears, another one from Charlie King, repeated in the So Far album. And that's about it for the contemporary current events edition of the show. Up next is a flashback to Thursday, February 20th, 2014, where co-host and guest Travelin' Tom Noddy will be talking with me on the history of the street performing struggle in Santa Cruz, the Great Morgani eviction. You may remember the Great Morgani, a man with many outfits, if you remember, he's been around for a while, though he hasn't. Don't think I've seen him out much in the COVID scene. And misguided notions of control being used on Pacific Avenue against performers. We also have misty-eyed Michael O'Grady in studio and others by phone. Those were the days when we had a phone line joining the conversation. And there's more on the Great Morgani if you want to go online to the Santa Cruz Indie Media. Bradley Allen's written a lengthy article on it, and you get pictures of Morgani doing his performing. I think he eventually came back. Initially, he left after he was threatened with tickets. He has these outrageous outfits, which are fun and entertaining, and I guess the merchants missed him, and he was... I always had mixed feelings about Frank. His name is Frank Great Morgani, because I felt that he didn't do enough to protect other performers. That was my feeling. But it's my usual sympathy for the underdog and hostility toward the overdog. The way I described it was, when Morgani got told to leave the avenue or was threatened with a fine because he was outside his little performer's box, which is what the city council passed in 2014 or so, as they became more and more reactionary, more and more determined to impose these very strict rules that had nothing to do with the needs of the community or any really bad behavior by performers, but just a determination to pander to a kind of a right-wing take-back Santa Cruz sentiment, which was electing people to city council and stacking the task force that they created and so forth. I wrote Chickens Coming Home to Roost. When they came for the peaceful panhandlers, I did nothing because I was not a panhandler. When they came for the homeless sitting next to but not obstructing businesses, I did nothing because I was not homeless. When they came for the political activists with tables, I did nothing because I was not a street tabler. When they came for the street vendors, I did nothing because I was not a street vendor. When they came for the less famous street performers, I did nothing because they'd never challenge a well-known and accomplished performer like me. When they came for me, there was no one to back me other than to offer sympathy and express dismay. The ordinance is being used to skewer Morgani on previously used to skewer other street performers of the display device law, which is still being cited by, I guess, I don't know whether it's ambassadors or hosts are doing it. They aren't quite police officers, but they used to call them the eyes and ears of the police force. Although apparently they've been behaving better than an earlier generation of hosts, as they used to be called. But they've still gone after a couple of performers, one performer and one jeweler, or one jeweler and one painter. I interviewed them a couple weeks back. They didn't give them tickets, but they sort of, I think they threatened them with tickets, or they discomforted them in some way. Anyway, if you want to read more about it, you can go to the Santa Cruz Indie Media, where I've written innumerable stories, or numerous stories. I'll read a little bit more of it just to sort of introduce you to the flashback. The ordinance is being used to skewer Morgani are the display device law and the move-along law and the sitting down on the sidewalk law. The former is almost unique in Santa Cruz, the display device law, and the latter, sitting down, was expanded in 2002 by former council members Ed Porter and Emily Riley to move along, quote, undesirables. At that time, peaceful but visible panhandlers with signs, political tablers raising uncomfortable issues downtown, and as it turned out, street vendors. The most recent intensification of these ordinances was created by the Bryant-Robinson City Council in the fall, banning blankets, requiring freestanding devices, limiting performers to 12 square feet total, and constricting even more severely the available locations. Ironically, the issue was raised in the early days of 2003 when Ed Porter pushed through his so-called improvement on the successful voluntary street performers guidelines, which you're going to hear some talk about in this flashback. It was billed as bad behavior control, but was actually directed against homeless people and political protesters. As it does today, city council staff and members moved ahead with their prefabricated, preordained agenda, largely ignoring public comment. Does that sound familiar, folks? All you fans of the library or defunding of police? The move-along law replaced the successful voluntary street performers guidelines, which had been in place for 22 years. Its full implementation was delayed. Neil Coonerty, that's the guy who used to own the bookshop Santa Cruz, his family took it over. The second edition of the Keep Santa Cruz Weird t-shirts significantly omitted the phrase "support your local street performer," which appeared on the initial t-shirt. Mike Rotkin spoke of coming back to examine the law in 6 months if there were any problems, which that examination never happened, and nor did the problems happen. I guess the problems that happened were people not liking the ordinance and not coming back to do any street performing. Steve Argue and others were hauled off to jail under this law when it was used against political protesters. You probably don't know Steve Argue if you weren't around in the around the turn of the millennium, but he was a outspoken Marxist activist who was jailed for a year for defending a woman against police aggression in a peaceful protest at the against, I guess, Representative Sam Farr when he was our representative and when he was supporting Bill Clinton's war against Yugoslavia, or the bombing of Yugoslavia. I and others went to jail for that one, protesting the... I think we were arrested. I don't know if we actually spent much time in jail. Not sure. Some of these protests tend to merge together in my mind. Anyway, there's a lot of my notes on this, which I think seem kind of perhaps dated as I look at them now, not because I don't think I think they do mean something, but they mean something mostly to people who were alive at that period of time. But I think you'll find some of the flashback of interest. If you don't, turn it off and go do some flashing of your own, so to speak. Not necessarily without clothing. Thanks for listening to this edition of Bathrobes, Beers, Broadsides. As I always say, and perhaps I'll see you down there tomorrow at San Lorenzo Park, 8 o'clock in the morning. We can sip a little coffee and chatter with the police officers as they show up.